Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
Welcome, everyone. Today we're diving deep into, well, arguably the most famous Malayalam novel of the 20th century. We're immersing ourselves in Chameen, which simply means the prawn. It was published back in 1956 by Thakazhi Sivasankara Pillai, who was a true giant of Indian literature, a master of social realism, and a Jnanpith Award winner.
That's right. And Chameenan. It's a novel that really crossed borders. It gained international fame, which was quite something for its time. Our goal today, really, is to get under the skin of this story, to see how this very specific tale, rooted in the fishing communities of Kerala, explores these huge universal themes, you know, forbidden love, the weight of tradition, maybe even fate.
It's quite a powerful mix.
Definitely. Think of this as a way to really grasp a foundational piece of not just Indian, but world literature. And there was that successful film adaptation in 1965, too, which brought it to even more people.
Okay, so the basic setup. It seems simple on the surface, but it's incredibly potent. It's a tragic love story set in a traditional fishing village. The core conflict is this collision between, well, intense personal desire and these ancient, rigid social rules.
And crucially, across religious lines.
Exactly. Between a Hindu fisherwoman and a Muslim trader, that element, right from the start, you feel it just seals their fate, doesn't it?
Absolutely. To really get the tragedy, you have to picture the world the Qazi paints. We're with the Araya fishing community right there on the coast of Kerala facing the Arabian Sea. These are quite marginalized people. Their whole lives revolve around the ocean.
And the Qazi's known for his realism, right?
Yes, very much so. He grounds us in their day-to-day lives, their struggles, but he does it with this incredibly lyrical, almost poetic prose. It feels very authentic.
So their lives are tied to the sea, which makes them vulnerable. But it's more than just the physical danger, isn't it? There's this belief system that governs everything.
That's the crucial part. The myth of Katalama, the sea mother.
Katalama.
Right.
And this isn't just like a quaint local legend.
Oh, no, not at all. It's deeply ingrained. It's like a social contract, almost a law of nature for them. The belief is absolute. A fisherman's safety out at sea, his luck, his very survival depends entirely on the complete chastity and faithfulness of his wife back on shore.
Wow. So even a thought.
Even a thought. Any transgression, real or imagined, they believe Katalama will get angry and the sea will claim the husband's life. This belief system isn't just background. It's the engine driving the plot towards tragedy. It makes everything feel inescapable, you know?
Like destiny.
It's such a powerful narrative device. It externalizes all the internal moral conflict. And caught right in the middle are Karuthama, the young Hindu fisherwoman.
And Parikuti, the Muslim fish trader she loves.
Their love crosses those religious divides, which makes it feel inherently pure in the novel, but just impossible in their society. Doomed from the start, really.
Precisely. Okay, maybe we should look at the main players involved. There are four key characters whose journeys intertwine.
Good idea. Mm-hmm. Let's start with Karuthama. Right. Karuthama. She's undoubtedly the tragic heroine. We see her go from this innocent girl experiencing first love to a really tormented woman.
Wow.
Her entire struggle embodies the novel's central conflict. It's her passionate, authentic love for Parikuti versus her duty and the social conformity demanded by her marriage to Palani.
That internal battle must be immense.
It is. It really drives the narrative tension throughout the book.
And then there's Parikuti. He strikes me as almost a romantic victim. He seems to represent this pure, selfless love, but he's completely powerless against the social forces. His motives seem untainted by greed or status, unlike others.
That's a great way to put it. He is powerless. His love is almost spiritual, isn't it? But the reality of their society just crushes him. He's left financially ruined, emotionally desolate. He spends much of the novel just enduring passively.
It's heartbreaking.
It really is. And his character starkly highlights the arbitrary cruelty of dividing people based on religion or caste.
But the catalyst for much of the tragedy isn't actually the love itself. It seems to be greed. Specifically, the greed of Karuthama's father, Chemban Kunju. How does the Qazi make his ambition so destructive?
Ah, Chemban Kunju. He's essentially the antagonist, driven by greed. His sole focus is climbing the social ladder, getting out of poverty. And for him, the ultimate symbols of success are owning his own boat and net.
Symbols of status.
Exactly. And his moral decline really kicks off with what you could call the story's original sin. He needs money for that boat and net, so he manipulates Parikuti, who loves Karuthama deeply. He takes a loan from Parikuti.
Knowing full well Perikuti hopes this will help him marry Kurutama.
Precisely. He implicitly dangles her as a reward, exploits Perikuti's pure love for his own material gain. It's a callous transaction that sets everything in motion.
Which then leads us to Palani, the man Kurutama is forced to marry. He seems like the innocent victim in all this.
He really is. Palani is a good man, a devoted fisherman. And crucially, he believes wholeheartedly in the Kadalama myth. It's absolute truth to him.
So his journey must be devastating, too.
Utterly heartbreaking. He starts off hopeful, believing his love and devotion can win Kurutama over, can erase the past. But slowly, the village gossip, his own suspicions, they eat away at him. He becomes aware of her suppressed feelings for Perikuti. He's completely caught in circumstances he can't control, and he's the one who ultimately pays the highest price.
Okay, so let's trace how this unfolds. Mm-hmm. It starts with Chemenkunju's deal with Perikuti, the betrayal.
Yes. Chemenkunju gets his money, buys his boat and net. Perikuti is hopeful, but Chemenkunju never intended to let his daughter marry a Muslim trader, especially not now he has achieved some status.
So to silence the rumors about Kurutama and Perikuti and to solidify his new position,
he quickly arranges Kurutama's marriage to Palani, another fisherman from a different village, an acceptable match within their community.
And that seals it. Kurutama is bound by duty. Perikuti is left completely shattered, financially ruined because Chemenkunju doesn't repay the loan properly, and emotionally broken.
Exactly. The rising tension phase is brutal.
So the middle part of the novel deals with the fallout, right? Kurutama tries to make the marriage work.
She does. She tries desperately to be a good, dutiful wife to Palani. They even have a child. She attempts to build a life conformed to expectations. But it's fragile. The shadow of her past love, the judgment of Palani's community, it's always there.
And Palani struggles with that suspicion.
Constantly. He's haunted by the gossip, by his own fears. Meanwhile, you see Chemenkunju back in his village. His material success is booming. He gets richer.
But at a cost.
A terrible cost. The Kazi shows how this ambition makes him cruel, miserly. His wife, Chaki, who is really the moral anchor of the family, dies, arguably due to his neglect and harshness. His son eventually abandons him in disgust, so Chemenkunju gets his wealth, his status, but he ends up utterly alone. Rich, but stripped of his humanity.
This unbearable tension has to break eventually. The climax arrives during a storm.
Yes, a massive storm hits the coast. It's the perfect setting for the final act. Kurutama, after years of suppressing her true feelings, feels this sense of impending doom, deeply connected to the Kadalama myth. She knows Palani is out at sea, and in this moment of crisis, she seeks out Perikuti.
He's still there. Still waiting.
He's always there. A haunting presence on the fringes. They find each other on the beach during the storm.
Then they finally
consummate their love. It's presented as this act of desperation, almost surrender. A final fatalistic choice to embrace their authentic feelings, even knowing, perhaps subconsciously, what it means according to the myth. It's tragic self-destruction in a way.
The dramatic irony is almost unbearable here. Because while they are together on the shore,
Palani is fighting for his life out at sea.
Against the storm.
And significantly, against a huge shark. The shark is seen almost as an omen or maybe an agent of Kadalama's wrath. His boat capsizes in a giant wave. He's killed.
So the myth is fulfilled at the exact moment of transgression.
Precisely. The timing is terrible, reinforcing the community's belief.
And the ending is just bleak.
Devastating. Palani's death is immediately interpreted by everyone as divine punishment for Kurutama's infidelity. She carries all the blame. The final image is Kurutama and Perikuti's bodies found washed ashore together, locked in a final embrace. It's a stark message about the price of defying social norms.
It leaves you wondering, was it truly the sea mother's justice? Or was it a terrible coincidence fueled by guilt, belief, and the storm?
The Kazi leaves that ambiguous, which makes it even more powerful, I think. It forces you to question the power of belief itself.
Okay, let's step back and unpack some of the bigger themes Gliazi is exploring here. The most obvious one is love transcending boundaries.
Absolutely. Kurutama and Perikuti's relationship is a direct critique of the cruelty and arbitrariness of religious and caste divisions. There's that line often associated with the spirit of the novel. Love knows no religion, no caste, no boundaries. It flows like the tide, touching every shore. That's the ideal.
An ideal that gets crushed by the second major theme, the tyranny of tradition and myth.
Right. The Kadalama legend functions as this powerful tool of social control, particularly over women's lives and bodies. And as we said, that ambiguity around Palani's death is key. Was it divine retribution? Or just a tragic convergence of fear, guilt, a storm, and a shark? By not giving a clear answer, Thakazi points the finger at the societal judgment itself as the true destructive force.
And the sea. It's more than just a backdrop, isn't it? You mentioned it, it feels like a character.
Definitely. The sea is Catalama in many ways. It embodies life and death, power, fate, the indifference of nature. It controls everything for this community. And set against this vast natural power, you have the very human, corrosive force of Chembonkunju's greed. His ambition for material things, the boat, the net, ultimately costs him everything that makes life meaningful, his family, his humanity.
Thakazi also uses literary techniques really effectively. The symbolism, the shark is maybe divine anger, the boat and net is hollow ambition, and that dramatic irony. Knowing the myth from the start makes watching the story unfold feel so inevitable.
It really does. You know the rules of this world. So when Karuthamma is forced into marriage, when she meets Parikuti again, you feel this sense of dread. The tragedy feels predetermined by the community's collective belief.
So what's the lasting impact? Why does this novel still resonate so strongly?
I think it leaves you with this profound sense of sadness, maybe even helplessness. It makes you grapple with big questions. Are these characters architects of their own doom through their passions and flaws? Or are they just pawns of fate, trapped by ancient social codes? It really forces you to think about the unwritten rules that govern societies, even our own.
Ultimately, Chimene feels like it captures this timeless, agonizing struggle, doesn't it? The struggle between your own heart's truth, that pure, natural love, and the often oppressive weight of tradition and societal expectation.
Yeah, exactly. And it shows, quite brutally, that sometimes living authentically, defying those rigid structures, comes at the highest possible price. A price Karuthamma and Parikuti certainly paid.
It leaves you with a challenging thought, especially considering how quickly the community judges Karuthamma. You have to ask yourself, what sin is there in loving someone with a pure heart, really? And what price does authenticity demand when the world is built on such rigid beliefs? Something to definitely mull all over. Outro sequence.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.